Today on Inside Utah Politics, we're getting ready for Election Day. What you need to know if you still need to turn in your ballot. Plus, dozens of races are on the ballot in Utah. How voters will shape the future of education when the Alpine School District dissolves. And daycare closures spark controversy in Salt Lake County. How parents are reacting to the budget cuts that they say took them by surprise.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thanks for joining us. I am Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. We begin our program today just 2 days away from polls opening on Election Day. Voters will weigh in on hundreds of races across the state in this year's municipal general election. But this year, there are new rules to keep in mind if you want your voice to be heard. So I'm joined today by Lanny Chapman. She is the Salt Lake County Clerk. Lanny, thank you for coming back to Inside Utah Politics.
It is my pleasure.
Okay, it is good to have you. You can set the record straight for all of this. First of all, we've got some new rules this year because the legislature passed a bill end of last session. It was called HB 300, and this bill implemented new election deadlines. So tell voters what they need to know.
So there's three things that we need to know. First, what really affects us today is our deadline to turn in ballots to have them counted. So we are no longer a postmark state. So the law, as you know, used to be postmark the day before Election Day, regardless of when it comes in, as long as it's within that canvas period, we could still count it. That is no longer the law of the land. Mm-hmm. We now have to make sure that ballots are in the care, custody, and control of the clerk by 8 p.m. on election night. So what that means for most of us is as long as you've had them turned in, if you've used a Dropbox, you're good to go. Even if you wait till 7:59 to use that Dropbox, that's still considered within our custody.
But it would be too late at this point to put it in the mail at this point.
Absolutely. It is too late to use the mail. At this point, I would definitely suggest that we all use Dropboxes.
How do you think that's going to impact voters in your county?
So not so much in our county. We are very close, and frankly, all of the Wasatch Front, we are very close to the receiving center for the post office. We can get mail within a day or two. But again, if you've taken the time to fill out that ballot, I and my colleagues want to take the time to count your ballot.
Yeah, okay, and it's so important, these deadlines, obviously. If you postmarked it and you put it in the mail, it won't count, and there's nothing you can do about that.
There's nothing I can do about it. Yeah. So, rule of thumb, after by today, let's make sure you're definitely using Dropboxes.
Okay, so there were some other changes that HB 300 made, and there was some confusion this week with one of the county clerks in Utah County who had some instructions in the ballot, but didn't put a box for the last four digits of your ID, which is going to be required in the future in Utah law because of this bill. Can you explain exactly when that's going to be required and that situation?
Sure. So there's two phases. Starting next year, every single by-mail ballot on the affidavit will have to have a section for you to enter the last four of your social security number, your driver's license number, or your Utah ID number, along with your signature, and we are to verify that. That's not the law of the land right now. Some clerks have decided to opt in a little bit earlier. Some have decided to wait. And that's where we're at. But starting next year, that's when you're gonna start seeing all throughout Utah, the last four, or space to put the last four. Starting in 2029, that is the only thing that will be required. It's the last four. We will not be looking at signatures at all.
Okay, so how is the state and or your office and or elections administrators around the state going to get the necessary processes ready before 2029? Because as I understand it right now, there is no way to verify those last four automatically. Like in a computer, you have to do those by hand, search for it. And then what happens if those last four don't match the signature?
Great questions. I think there's a lot of room between now and then to get back with the legislators to make sure we're making the most efficient and safe and secure laws that are needed for elections.
So do you think there needs to be some tweaks to HB 300?
I do.
Tell me which ones.
So I think it would be great if we first looked at signatures and we did not get rid of that, and then looked at the last four.
Okay, to like extra verify? But what happens if they don't match?
That's when we send out the cure letters.
Okay.
So cure letters are not gonna go away, and that's when we can't accept your ballot as is. Currently, people get them if they forgot to sign, if their signature didn't match. under the new law, we're going to look at the last four, then your signature, and then provide you a cure letter if they don't match.
Okay. Talk to me about turnout thus far in Salt Lake County. I know we're still early. It's hard to kind of know. You won't know until 8 p.m. on election day, but what are you sensing right now?
So right now, it's pretty normal for a municipal general year. It's hard to go from a presidential general year like last year to a year like this. It's just historically, we don't see the turnout that we normally see during presidential years. But right now, we're on pace. I'd love to see more ballots, though.
Is there any way that we can up turnout in municipal elections? I mean, we preach all the time about how the rubber meets the road with these candidates, but it doesn't seem to resonate. What do you think we need to do?
You know, I think we're doing everything we can. It's up to the voters. They have the ability to have their voice heard or not have their voice heard during elections. But I strongly encourage us all to make sure that we have our voices heard. Like you said, determines when your garbage is picked up, if you have recycling, if bike lanes are important to you, parks, dogs, on leash, off leash.
Child care at the county level.
Absolutely.
We saw that this week. Yeah, interesting. Is there anything else that you're sensing? Oh man, I just wish the public knew about this when it came to municipal elections.
So we've already talked about it. It's that deadline. I want to make sure at this point, if you still have that yellow ballot in your possession, to turn it into a drop box. Don't use the post office at this point, or go vote in person. We're gonna have 19 amazing vote centers on election day for Salt Lake County voters to utilize.
Yeah, how many races in Salt Lake County, do you know?
Salt Lake County has 70 races, about 160 candidates.
Okay, and we're doing ranked choice voting
for Salt Lake and Midvale.
Okay, sorry, just for Salt Lake and Midvale, so yeah. That's a lot. For me, you know, I may not even have a race in my city.
Yeah. I make sure to eat my Wheaties. So does my team. Yeah. We're ready for it.
That's a lot. Lady, anything else that I didn't ask you?
Just make sure to turn in your vote. Your voice matters. Especially, make sure it's heard.
Especially at this level, these races are decided by like 100 people sometimes.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So important. Lanny Chapman, Salt Lake County Clerk. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
All right. And what's coming up next? Still ahead on Inside Utah Politics. Understanding what is next for the Alpine School District split. We explain the stakes when Utah County voters weigh in this Tuesday. And coming up, solving Utah's housing problems. We hear from the governor and a panel of experts who hope to do just that.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome back. There are several brand new races on the ballot this year, but Northern Utah County might take the cake. This year, over 70 candidates filed for nearly two dozen seats on new school boards, coming together after voters decided to split the Alpine School District. So to dig into what this all means for parents and students, I'm joined today by Rich Stoll. He's the Director of Communications for the Alpine District. Rich, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lindsay.
Okay, so just laid on me the biggest concern right now that you're seeing from parents as Alpine has split. You still represent Alpine, but there are two other districts to the east and southwest.
Three other districts, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So what is Alpine dealing with right now in particular? So
our biggest challenge is to maintain our high levels of student achievement while three new districts get set up. So, I mean, that's really historic. It's really monumental. Nobody's done it before. I was just talking with our superintendent, and he was he explained the challenge is this. After November 4th, he will work with four boards of education at once to make sure that schools are ready when those three new districts take over in July of 2027.
That's a lot of politics, my friend.
Yes. That's 28 board members.
Yeah. Okay. So as voters are getting ready to elect these 21 different people, right, in these three different school boards, what should they be thinking about as they cast their votes?
Well, some of the issues that that our schools have historically dealt with are building. How do you properly resource facilities to meet the needs of students? And so we have lots of elementary schools. In some parts of our district, we have elementary schools that have more than 1,000 students. And in other parts, it's under 500. And so equitable resourcing across those schools is going to be a challenge for new school boards because sometimes you got to build, and building can be quite expensive.
And do you have to raise taxes to do it?
That's right. They have to decide if they can do that. Those boards, of course, will have the authority to raise funds in a number of ways, including through tax increments. Mm-hmm. They might want to put general obligation bonds before their voters at some point.
Yeah.
So those are going to be the biggest decisions. The first decision they're going to have to make is hiring a new superintendent. So we're going to have, within short order, we're going to have three new superintendents in Northern Utah County, in addition to our superintendent, who will serve throughout the transition until Alpine School District dissolves.
I know there were many people in the Alpine School District who didn't want this split. How are your teachers and your community, your staff, how are they doing with this?
Yeah, we're approaching change with optimism. There are opportunities that come with change, no matter what it looks like. And this is going to be a big change for many, many educators. Now, I should say, for most of our parents and students, they won't notice a difference initially. I mean, most of our parents, overwhelmingly, they are pleased with the experience that they get at our schools. Mm-hmm. So our schools, our principals, our teachers have done an outstanding job making school fun and rewarding for those families and students. And that will remain, that will continue. For our employees, it's a little bit different, right? Because things will change. They will have new employers. They will have, in some cases, new procedures. And we've got to really manage that carefully. So we're doing a lot of listening. We're seeking feedback. Our superintendent has made it a priority to visit those educators in the schools and find out what their concerns are so that we can do things to help them manage that transition. And also, he feels an obligation to report to these new school boards what they can do to make those new school districts wonderful places to work.
Yeah, so what does a school, this is going to sound like a dumb question, but what I'm getting at is, what is the role of the school board? What does the school board do? What should voters know?
Yeah, the school board, those school boards collectively, seven members in each school district, have ultimate authority over what is taught in the classrooms, how much they pay teachers, what class sizes are like, right? All of those decisions are ultimately going to be reflective of the board's priorities, and then superintendent and district staff will carry out those priorities. So, you know, the philosophy of education, how do we want our kids to be educated from pre-K all the way through graduation? In one of our schools that I met with today, they have programs to help their juniors and seniors earn associate's degrees before they graduate high school. That's been a priority, that's been an effort. Will things like that continue to be funded? In Alpine School District, we are really proud of our dual language programs and our gifted and talented programs. And so new school boards will have to decide if they want to continue to fund those in the same ways, or maybe even more. Class sizes are always a big concern for parents. And so whether those new boards put extra resources towards reducing class size or increasing teacher pay to attract the best teachers, there are dozens and dozens of priorities that they get to choose among. And so voters are going to have to decide who best represents the sensitivities of their communities.
Well, we always talk about how the rubber meets the road with local elections, right? And we can't get turnout here in Utah. We get like 10% turnout. But what you're describing is a massive undertaking and who are really going to impact your kids' lives.
That's right. What's really exciting about this process is we've got a lot of passion and a lot of energy around these school board elections. So we've been meeting candidates. They've been coming to our meetings. They've been visiting schools, coming to public hearings. It's really exciting to see this energy around these local elections. And I think that's a real big benefit of this transition to three school districts. It's gotten people focused on really what matters, what they want out of their public education system. And it's gotten folks, not only candidates, but voters, to look at those issues and decide what they want to prioritize in their community. So real benefit, we really hope that continues even past this November into the transition to the new school districts and beyond.
What else do you want parents to know in our final minute here? You've got Aspen Peaks, Lake Mountain, and Tippinogas, the three new districts that are coming online here after November 4th. We'll know who these school boards are. Is there anything else that your parents are just really having a hard time grasping?
What we want them to know is that Alpine will continue to serve them and their students until June 30th, 2027. At that moment, all authority for education in their communities goes to those new school districts. And so between now and then, we're going to be working with those new school boards to make sure that the excellent opportunities that their kids have gotten in Alpine will continue. And we're going to teach them everything we've learned over more than 100 years of educating kids in Northern Utah County.
And then you've got to get buildings, right? You've got to have classrooms for them to go to.
Absolutely. And we know that we're focused on this transition. We know that it's important to our community. Whether somebody voted for this split or not, we know we owe it to them to deliver the smoothest transition possible so that their kids can continue to receive excellent education. That's what we're all in this for. Our teachers are in the classroom because they want to teach kids. Our administrators are focused on kids, and at the district level, and these board members, they want the best for their communities, and it starts with educating children.
Rich Stoll with Alpine School District, appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for coming in. All right, coming up still on Inside Utah Politics, the governor names a new leader in Utah's fight against homelessness, what the incoming coordinator hopes to bring to the table. Stay with us. After 30 days of bickering at the time of this recording, Democrats and Republicans are suggesting a bipartisan solution to reopen the government. It could be on the horizon. Our Washington correspondent Raquel Martin has the story.
On the brink of a potential hunger crisis and with no deal in sight.
Holy God of grace and mercy.
Democrats and Republicans are looking to God himself to help end the government shutdown.
If there are any moderates left in the Democratic Party in the Senate, we pray that they will come to their senses.
Thursday, House Speaker Mike Johnson called on five Senate Democrats to end the 30-day standoff by voting for a Republican short-term funding bill before federal food assistance runs dry this Saturday.
This feels very much like in my state, Louisiana, is a hurricane state. We do everything we can to prepare, but we know the real pain is about to hit, and we feel helpless.
But Democrats argue the Trump administration can help, pointing to a $6 billion emergency fund at the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The Trump administration insists that funding is unavailable for SNAP during the shutdown.
Ripping food away from the mouths of hungry children, that's policy violence.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries held a press conference with faith leaders and Americans impacted by the shutdown.
I feel like we're under attack.
And we're going to stand on the side of the health care of the American people, of the safety of the American people.
Some lawmakers suggest prayers could be working.
I do feel that things are beginning to loosen.
A small but growing number of Democrats and Republicans say they're working towards a compromise. Still, Senate leaders are digging in their heels.
Republicans are living in fantasy.
The Democrats are ready to continue this shutdown, I guess forever.
The next vote to reopen the government isn't expected until next week. In Washington, Raquel Martin.
Well, we now know who will run Utah's efforts to combat homelessness when the current coordinator steps down. Governor Cox has appointed Representative Tyler Clancy to be the state's next homeless coordinator. He'll replace Wayne Niederhauser, who is set to retire in December. Now, Clancy represents parts of Provo, including BYU, and works as a detective with Provo PD. He's passed several bills addressing homelessness and tells us he wants to take a balanced approach to the issue, looking at everything the state can do for people struggling to keep housing.
Accountability without compassion is going to be cold and brutal. Compassion without accountability is going to be, enabling. And we don't want either of those choices. Where you'll see some energy, I think, is that people are willing to look at all of the different tools in the toolkit, not limit ourselves based on what our political beliefs are.
Well, Clancy will take over as homeless coordinator on March 9th of next year, allowing him to serve in the legislature one more general session. Well, parents are speaking out after Salt Lake County announced their daycare centers will be closing. The county council voted this week to cut the child care budget, forcing four daycare centers to close starting in 2026. Now, some parents say they feel blindsided by a vote that they knew nothing about.
We did not know that this vote was going to happen. We didn't know that there was a possibility that we were going to lose our child care.
Well, the daycare scheduled to close are located at recreation centers in Kearns, Magnum, Mill Creek, and Salt Lake City. One mother tells us that she's a veteran and furloughed government worker.
I already have like financial stress happening me personally, and I'm sure there's so many other people who could be in my same position that go to these daycares or even have just financial stress in general.
Well, council members say that in 2024, it cost the county $3 million to run the four child care centers, with federal grants paying only a portion of that cost. Another decision has drawn reactions from Capitol Hill. Utah's Senate Minority Leader Luz Escamilla promising state action. She released a statement that reads in part, quote, "I am shocked and deeply disappointed by the Salt Lake County Council's recommendation to close its licensed child care centers." She went on to say, "I have already heard from many constituents who depend depend on these services. Access to high-quality, affordable child care has been one of my top legislative priorities for years, and I am actively working to find creative solutions to help these families. Well, innovators in the world of housing met in Utah this week to discuss how they're working to solve Utah's housing crisis. It's the Ivory Innovation Summit, and Governor Cox wrapped up the event speaking about his housing agenda. Our Jordan Tracy has more on the ideas and how they apply to Utah's housing.
Innovation was on full display here at the U, whether it was hemp-built homes for the Lower Sioux community or permitting reform in order to streamline construction. The prevailing theme was finding ways to say yes and build more homes. The summit is hosted by the nonprofit Ivory Innovations that works to build affordable housing across Utah, anywhere from senior living to modular homes, finding new ways to solve a lingering problem.
And meet people where they're at, as opposed to, you know, one thing I say all the time is you can't build the way you've always built and hope to get different results, right? That's the definition of insanity. And I think we've been in a little bit of that for too long in the housing ecosystem. And so what we really think about at Ivory Innovations is how to change the paradigm.
Panels of experts in a wide range of housing development joining together to share notes, ideas, and presenting to lawmakers to see if it can work in their homes.
When we're looking at all these problems, we need to stop thinking of they can do this or they can do that, but what can we do together? And so I think the best way to do that is by bringing everyone together and really helping them understand each other's perspectives.
Affordable, luxury, townhomes, apartments, even homes made of hemp, it's all of the above approach to find solutions.
That's why we kind of always say any housing is good housing, because any housing helps free up another home for someone at a different level.
Something that Governor Cox, who is pushing for more detached single-family homes, agrees with, recognizing that starter homes can look different for everyone. He believes, though, that building that middle part of a housing cycle will open things up for all levels of need.
So we have people in starter homes now that have their salaries increased, their families are bigger now, they want to move into something else. But interest rates are so high right now that they just can't do it. So they're holding on for too long. And we just don't have that churn. So by building this middle, getting people out of apartments, it does trickle all the way down.
One of the battles, the image some may have of the words affordable housing. The reality, it applies to people much closer than you think.
We just always have this mentality of not them, you know what I mean? And if we can put a face on who these people are, I think it might help people start to say, yeah, they can live next door to me. Like, I'd love to have my granddaughter be able to afford a house in my neighborhood.
And a personal anecdote from the governor today, he said his son showing him starter homes at $275,000 until the governor realized it was in Indiana. He says it is a failure if young Utahns have to move out of state to find the homes they can afford and the ones that they need. Reporting at the University of Utah, Jordan Tracy, ABC 4 News.
Jordan, thank you for that report there. Well, that's going to do it for Inside Utah Politics this week. Stay in touch with us on social media, won't you? You can find me on X, Threads, and Instagram, Lindsay on Air. Lindsay spelled with an A. Just search for my name as well. You can also find Inside Utah Politics in podcast form, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're looking for more national political coverage, check out our political power ranker. This is our next star national political director and the head of Emerson College Polling, who look at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. Now, we carry that for you on our free streaming app, News for Utah Plus. We also have more Inside Utah Politics content there, and you can download that on Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV. Well, thanks for staying with us this week. We will see you next time.